Writer Frank McCourt has become famous for many things: being Irish, having a miserable Irish childhood, being the author of Angela's Ashes and its sequel, Tis. You might think if everyone in America has had their 15 minutes of fame, McCourt has had about 25 minutes. But McCourt was also a teacher in the New York public school system for 30 years, and the first decade or so were in tough industrial high schools, schools with problems that are still familiar. Thousands upon thousands of students passed in front of him during those years. He figures about 12,000. Frank McCourt's new book is called Teacher Man, and we welcome him into the studio now. Hello, Frank McCourt.
Thank you, Jackie. Hello.
Teacher Man is an amusing and grim chronicle, both.
That's one of the characteristics of the Irish. They used to call it smiling through your tears.
Tell me about McKee Technical High School on Staten Island, the first place you ever taught back in 1958.
I couldn't get a job anywhere else. The speech bureau at the Board of Education said, questioned my foreignism, my brogue, so to speak, that they didn't want their children going, coming home sounding like Barry Fitzgerald and Maureen O'Hara in those days. So I finally, they were so desperate for teachers in vocational high schools. And everybody told me, if you're going into teaching, don't even think about going into a vocational high school. They'll kill you. The movie out at that time was The Blackboard Jungle.
So did they kill you?
All I can say is that they made a man of me, or they made a teacher of me, or they made something of me. The main thing was that I survived classrooms in a vocational high school when many people fled for the hills and became investment bankers. But I hung on there, I suppose, because I had moments of great triumph and illumination along the way. And there's nothing like that when you finally hit it with a bunch of teenagers. It's a paradise.
Talk about how you did that. Is there something from the book that you want to read that would illustrate that, or a tale?
Well, I have. I'll read you what I'm talking about. The opening, my second day at McKee, a boy asks a question that sends me into the past and colours the way I teach for the next 30 years. Joy Santos calls out, "Yo, teach!" "You are not to call out. You are to raise your hand." "Yeah, yeah," said Joy. "Yeah, yeah." They have a way of saying yeah, yeah, that tells you they're barely tolerating you. "Yo, teacher man, call me Mr. McCourt." "Yeah, okay, so you Scotch or something?" Joy is the mouth. There's one in every class, along with the complainer, the clown, the goody-goody, the beauty queen, the volunteer for everything, the jerk. It's the job of the mouth to ask questions, anything to keep the teacher from the boring lesson. "No, I'm not Scotch, I'm Irish." "Oh, yeah? What's Irish?" "Irish is whatever comes out of Ireland. Like St. Patrick, right?" "Well, no, not exactly." And this leads to the telling of the story of St. Patrick, which keeps us away from the boring English lesson, which leads to other questions. "Yo, teacher man." Joy again. "Did you go out with girls in Ireland?" "No, damn it, sheep. We went out with sheep. What do you think we went out with?" And the class exploded. And they went home and told their parents that afternoon how this teacher, this new Irish teacher, went out with sheep.
You did hit upon strategies that at least one nasty administrator called pedagogical pay dirt. I mean, you did work to connect with them. Will you tell us how?
I had to overcome their resistance to two main things, grammar and poetry. And I was always racking my brains. How do you overcome the resistance to grammar? They say, "Oh, all these rules. Who makes up all these rules?" And I said, "Well, you know, psychology is the study of the way human beings behave. Grammar is the study of the way language behaves." "Oh, yeah, language behaves." "Yeah, it behaves. When you're out in the street, you talk one way. When you're at home, another way. There's formal English, informal English, colloquial English. And then down there is what you use all the time outside the school, obscenity." And they were fascinated with that, how language changes from place to place, from time to time. Down the centuries, words change. I got into all of that. Mm-hmm. I think the main thing was to put them at ease and take away the threat of that awful thing called the quiz, the test, the exam.
I love the part about you assigning them excuses, because you read so many forged letters, so many great excuses.
It's the first thing in the morning to come in with the excuse notes. I used to throw them into a drawer. And then I realized, I looked at the writing, which was classical American prose. They wrote in the excuse notes in the way they never did when I assigned them an essay or a story. And then I typed them up and I handed them out. I handed out copies. And they read them and they said, "What's this?" I said, "They're excuse notes." "Oh, yeah, who wrote them?" I said, "You did." Then I assigned them an excuse note from Adam to God, blaming Eve for what went on, or from Eve to God, blaming Adam. You know, all excuse notes for their behavior. Then after that, I hit upon the bright idea of having them write obituaries. I had them write their own obituaries. they all died peacefully in bed. One girl died surrounded by the Kennedy family, which Jack Kennedy came back from his grave at Arlington to stand by her bed. And Jackie Kennedy, well, they're all there. Then I had them write obituaries of teachers. No teacher died peacefully in bed.
I think it's every teacher's hope. And I know that it was yours, you know, from reading here, even though you have wonderful phrases in here, you know, they turned their pages as though they were made of lead. Yeah. Were there students who you connected with, students who you hear from today, who you never thought you'd hear from again?
I was out in Los Angeles the other night and doing a reading at one of the bookstores. And this tall man, bald, with a fringe of silver hair, said, "I was in your first class at McKee High School." That was in 1958. "David Wagner," he said. And I remembered him. I remembered his mop of hair when he had it. And he said, "We liked you because you were the only one who laughed over what we did with Miss Locascio's car." And then I had this vague memory. They didn't like Miss Locascio. And they were geniuses in this department. They hoisted her car into a tree.
Oh, my God.
Near the school. And I said, "How did you do that, David?" And he said, "You were the only teacher who laughed." I said, "You can be bloody sure, David, when they went home, they laughed. They didn't want to laugh before the kids." But I couldn't help laughing. And I said, I was admiring your mastery of physics, your mastery of hoists and pulleys and leverage and everything else. He said, "Nobody could figure out how we did it."
What did the kids give you that you carry away with you? What sort of confidence? What kind of maturity?
Well, first of all, their insistence, even though they didn't articulated their insistence on honesty. They'd say, "Oh, Mr. McCourt, that's not what you said last Wednesday." And that, I found, was the big, if you want to call it, a weapon in teaching. And to admit also what you didn't know when you didn't know.
Hmm. Well, as you apparently once told a student, "I have no rivers of repentance running down my cheeks." This has been grand. It's really been good.
It's a pleasure, Jack. Thank you.
Frank McCourt, his new memoir is called Teacher Man. And there's more about how Frank McCourt came to write Teacher Man in an excerpt from the book at our website, npr.org.